And we welcome you to another edition of Giants First and 10 here on MSG. Over the next hour, we'll get you set for the Giants and San Diego Chargers. 10 things that you need to know about this football game. And to help us along, as always, I got my Hall of Famer, Harry Carson. I got my two-time Super Bowl champion, Carl Banks. And I've got my protector, the one, the only, Roman Oben. All right, let's take a look at what's coming up on the program. We're going to talk with Giants head coach Tom Coughlin, as we do each and every week. We'll take you inside the Giants locker room. You'll hear from Entrell Roll coming up later on the show. In our Blitz segment, we'll talk about quarterbacks that don't have rings. Who's the best quarterback without a Super Bowl trophy? That'll be a discussion point. Also coming up on the program, we're going to go to Dan Fouts and talk with him about the Giants and Chargers and get you set for this game. Also on the program, we have our online segment. Tom Rock of Newsday, Art Stapleton of The Record. They'll sit in and discuss everything about the Giants. And we'll also bring you Carl Banks with the strategy on the coach's tape. But it's time for item number one. We put it up on the board. We call it our no huddle. We got to get things going in a nice way. 25 seconds go on the clock. And we'll start with Harry Carson. And Harry, don't touch that remote.
You know, I know how Giant fans feel. Because last week in that Washington Giants game, I almost turned the television off after the first quarter because I was thinking, oh, no, here we go. They're going to get blown out down in Washington. But I did not. And as a result, you know, Giants came back, played a great game. They won the game. I hope that they're on the upswing now and no more down swings and they can right everything and just finish out the season on a high note.
Just made it.
I was waiting on that.
Harry just made it. All right, Carl, 25 seconds on the clock for you. This is a week for speed.
It is. They have to be good early. And when I say be good early is you've got an offense with Phillip Rivers there. They can't let him manage the game in these third and shorts. They've got to create a negative play and manage the back end of the defense.
Oh, and you're managing your time quite well.
There we go.
Carl will go to the coach's tape a little bit later on in the show and dial into the strategy component of this game between the Giants and the Chargers. All right, Roman, we got 25 seconds on the clock. You're laughing, I'm laughing, because you're over every week. But anyway, you're kind of channeling Kreskin. This is about the mind.
Yeah, 100%. It's a mindset, Harry. You talked about this. Last week, a team that was down 14-0, 6 weeks ago, the game was over, but they came back, ran the ball, defense in the second half. Justin Tuck pulled a page out of, you know, 2007 or 2011 Super Bowl, and you're starting to see a team that has a mindset that they need going on the road in San Diego. That's what they're going to have to use this last quarter of the season.
See what happens? We give them a lot of reps.
There we go.
No false starts for my man Roman.
Late season improvement.
Getting better. Getting better.
Time to put item number two up on the board. And as always, we have a chance to talk with Giants head coach Tom Coughlin. Earlier in the week, I spoke to the coach about the Giants and Chargers and having to travel again this week. All right, you're going to have to go back on the road this week. You go to San Diego. It's a long trip. You take on the Chargers. Whereas this is a division foe that you play twice a year and you're coming off the Cowboys game and even the Packers, who it feels like you play. Now you're going into sort of a theater of the unknown with San Diego because they have a new staff, new system in place. How hard is it to prepare for something new like that?
Well, we've studied them in the offseason, where the head coach came from, et cetera, et cetera. But we've also seen them play along the way. We saw them against the Redskins, for example. So hopefully that'll help us as we get into it. Today, Bob, you can have anything you want in a split-second timing. So you can have everything from game one right to the present situation that we're in a particular area. You may want all the third and ones or all the goal line plays or all the third and seven to tens. You can have that from the computer very, very quickly. So it does help you.
Phillip Rivers, just quickly, he's a deceiving kind of guy because of the way he throws the ball, maybe a little Bernie Kosar-ish for our older fans. It's not the classic look, but he delivers the ball very accurately, doesn't he?
And very timely. And he is an exceptional passer and has done this for many, many years.
And final question, Coach. After the disappointment from the Cowboys game, and then your team fell behind against the Washington Redskins, you have to be very proud of your group with just the fight that this team continues to show.
Well, that's the whole point. Resiliency was a big word that we used. Matter of fact, General Odierno used it as he spoke to our team the night before the game. But it was a big word for us going into the ball game. And, you know, the Redskins started off with no huddle. And we knew that no huddle was coming. That's how they that was their successful drives against the 49ers the week before, but when? And they started the game with it. So there was a little scrambling around going on, and then we kind of settled down, and the game, it's a long game. You know, you're not going to be discouraged by a couple of drives. However, you are anxious about answering. And once we answered and it was 14-7, playing a little better on defense, we felt a little better about our situation.
Well, we saw the Giants making plays, none better than that Will Hill play at the end of the game, Harry. And that's the fight that Coughlin talks about. Will Hill wanted that ball, and he sealed the game for the Giants.
You know, it's amazing how during the course of the season, we've seen multiple sides of this team. And early on, there were sides that I really didn't like that I saw because it appeared that they just weren't good enough. But these guys are good enough, but they have to show up each and every play and give the best that they have within themselves. And, you know, the way that they played last week against Washington shows that they are resilient and they can come back and they can fight.
Washington this year has been great in the second half. They've fallen behind a lot of these games. They put up big numbers. They had less than 100 yards of offense in the second half. What changed?
Well, I think the Giants' defense, they made a concerted effort. Once they neutralized the Morris, the running game, then they went towards the quarterback and they started to put a lot of pressure because he was one-dimensional.
Roman, why did the Giants run on the ball better? I mean, early in the year, they couldn't run it a lick. Now they're running it effectively.
I think all those repetitions, all those failures have led to some of these successes. You're going back a few weeks ago, they ran the ball 30 times. Then you have the 200-yarder, and then they're running the ball well in situations. So I think the confidence has a lot to do with that.
And the commitment to run it.
And yeah. I also think that Peyton Hillis, I think he was really a factor in that game and, you know, with the running game.
All right, there you go. All right, we're just getting started. Speaking of the Giants running game, speaking of the Giants defense, who better to go into the Giants locker room than Paul Dottino? We're going to be back with Paul Dottino's locker room report as we continue with Giants first and 10 right here on MSG.
My number one goal every year is to help lead our team to win a lot of football games. And so in a lot of ways, I'm not pleased at all because have only led us to win five. But from a just playing the position standpoint, I've played more consistent week to week.
Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers, as we welcome you back to Giants first and 10. Chargers 5-7 on the season. Disappointing year for San Diego as well. Item number three goes up on the board. It's a little locker room chatter with Paul Dottino. And, Paul, you're going to dive into how this Giant defense plans on trying to slow down Philip Rivers, who his numbers don't tell the story of San Diego's season.
No, you know, it's funny, Bob. This is a guy who's already gone to four Pro Bowls and may be on his way to a fifth. In fact, he leads the NFL with a career-high 70% completion mark. The Giants are quite impressed.
Running a lot of crossing routes and really putting a lot of pressure on your defenders to pass things along, to communicate out there and letting the receivers make plays. So he's done a good job getting the ball out. You know, our job is obviously to pressure him, keep pressure in his face so he can't step up, and if they do catch the ball, make the tackle.
You know, they've done some things differently with the offense, and also like I say, you know, his decision making is a lot more crisp, you know, this year, and you know, he's not taking too many sacks. He's very decisive what he wants to do with the football.
And so, to this point, Rivers has thrown 23 touchdown passes and only 9 interceptions. He's been sacked 22 times, the fourth fewest in the league. Carl, I have to ask you, I'm being told the system has a lot to do with him becoming more efficient. He's less like that Favre gunslinger that we've seen in the past who made mistakes.
Well, his percentages, his completion percentages are up because they do well on first down and he stays in third and short. So that's the key to get him in some third and 10 situations.
Yeah, you look at that Mike McCoy system they brought from Denver, but, you know, people I've spoken to, Phil's given a lot of credit to Ken Whisenhunt, who's a great play caller, and Frank Wright, who's his quarterback coach. So that's really aided in his development this year. He's getting rid of that ball quick.
Yeah, I mean, Whisenhunt, the former head coach of the Cardinals, he's a good coach. He's a good offensive coach. All right, Paul, let's shift gears here now and put item number four up on the board. Again, in the locker room, kind of take a look at the Giants on offense. Are they starting to kind of break through a little bit?
Well, you know, Bob, we've talked how they've been more patient over the last month and a half, and they're kind of attacking the middle of the field. Tight end Brandon Myers has been the recipient of some of those good things. He's got a touchdown catch in each of the last two games. and says there's been some opportunities there.
You kind of take what they give you. You know, earlier on in the year, the guys on the outside were catching quite a bit of balls and, you know, get on the same page like we've talked about, and things start clicking, you know, the last few weeks.
Kind of depends on the week, on you know, what on when certain pass plays are called, you know, what the coverage is, and he's been, you know, doing a good job of winning his one-on-one matchups, and so you know, he's done a good job of getting open when we needed to him, and that's good. He's you know, that's a big part of our offense, getting that tight end more involved, and he's done a good job.
Now, over the course of the last 3 weeks, the Giants have targeted Myers 15 times. He's caught 13 balls. The 15 targets, Roman, is second on this team during that time to Victor Cruz. So how important is it that the Giants truly get the tight end involved in this offense?
Well, it's very important. I mean, here's a guy, 80 catches last year when he was all the Raiders had, and there was some criticism early. You know, the stumble in Denver, that Bears interception at the end of the game, but he's finally settled in and really found that niche in between. You simplify it with the running game, and I think he's finally starting to have some cohesion up there.
Yeah, he creates his own opportunities. He's catching 13 out of 15. That's called creating your opportunity, because the quarterback will trust that you'll catch the ball.
Yeah, I'm surprised he's not having a bigger year, to be honest with you. I thought he was going to have a bigger year fitting into this offense, but it hasn't worked out.
Well, a lot of things didn't work out for the offense early. When you look at the running back situation, the offensive line situation, they're just now stabilizing it.
And Myers is a bit banged up, too, going into this weekend, isn't he?
Yeah, got a little bit of a sore groin this past week, but feels like he's going to play, and why not? He's on a bit of a roll. He doesn't want to sit out.
Yeah, that's a good point, Paul. Good stuff, as always. Paul DeTino, working the Giants locker room for us each and every week. Well, let's take a look at the Giants First and 10 programming. Of course, it debuts every Friday night on MSG. It also will re-air two times this Saturday, and then you can check it again on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. immediately following Giants Chronicles. When we come back, a very special guest in studio. In fact, he's the reigning NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Justin Tuck will join us as we continue with Giants First and 10 right here on MSG. Welcome back to Giants First and 10 here on MSG. On Sunday, it's the Giants and Chargers in San Diego. Time for item number 5. It's our player spotlight. Justin Tuck, a leader on and off the field for the Big Blue.
I missed it. I'm ready to play tonight. Let's go out here and give 100%. Because they 100 don't even come close to our 100.
Pressure is set by Tuck and Joseph. Justin Tuck, wallop, no John Moreno.
It's all about what we do. When we play our ball, we win games. That's elevated to the max tonight.
Freeman back to throw, under pressure. Chased and sacked by Tuck at the 32-yard line.
Another great play by Justin Tuck. That's good hustle there.
Let's go, baby. There was nobody outside of me. The tight end was flexed out. So I was like, I'm going to beat him inside because I know I got outside help.
Back to throw. He's under pressure. Sacked by Justin Tuck back at the 38-yard line. He play fake back to throw. He feels pressure. He's going to get sacked again.
Justin Tuck.
That's the way to play football, baby! Yeah.
Dances to his left. He's chased by Tuck. Sacks him from behind. So Tuck with 4 sacks.
Got 3, get 4. Got 4. What's better than 4? 5.
And Justin Tuck joins us right now in studio after his 4-sack performance in the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. How'd it feel? Pretty good, huh?
You know what? I'm just embarrassed right now because I'm obviously underdressed.
It's all right. You got your giant red on.
You're good, man. No, it felt great, though. It felt better to get a win, but to have a game like that on a Sunday night game, a big game against, you know, the arch rival Redskins, it felt great.
You know, one of the things that really flew under the radar early this year is how consistent this defensive line has been against the run.
Yeah.
Obviously, the pass rush has gotten much better as the season went on, but talk about the commitment to stopping the run. that you guys walked into the season with?
I mean, yeah. Considering the backs that we've played this year, I think we've played 9 out of the top 10, you know, rushing gainers in the league. We've played pretty well against it. And I think that's just been, like you said, a commitment to it, understanding that you want to kind of make these quarterbacks a little one-dimensional. You don't want to give them, be able to hand the ball off and get them in the third and short situations like that. You want to get them in, third and long situations. And for us, man, it's always been a passion of mine and this entire D-line to show that we're more physical than whatever O-line we're going against. And, the ideal way of doing that is making sure those rushing yards are down. So we did a pretty good job of that this year.
You're officially the first guest we've had that I actually played against. Going back to your rookie year, last time we Chargers played the Giants in 05.
Let's not talk about that.
What's the mindset, when you're playing these AFC teams that you don't see a lot?
Yeah.
You play the division, you play the Green Bay almost once a year, but what's the mindset playing these AFC teams during the week?
Well, for us, man, you just gotta go to the classroom. You gotta make sure that you try your best to decipher everything that they're gonna throw to you, because like you said, we don't have no we play Washington, Dallas, all these guys twice a year. I feel like I can go in those games without practice, because you know how they're gonna try to attack you. We don't know how San Diego's going to attack us. We don't know how they're going to adjust to certain looks that we're going to give them. So it definitely does us a lot of help to go in and make sure you go in that film room and watch all that film to see how they've played against teams that stack up like us, and you give yourself a better shot.
Now, aside from being an accurate passer, Philip Rivers, big, strong guy, what are the challenges that he presents for a defensive lineman?
A lot of them. One, he gets the ball out of his hands very quickly. He's very precise in where he's going to go with the ball. And like you said, he's very accurate. I think he's completing like 70% of his passes this year. He has a lot of weapons. And, that running game is a lot better than people give it credit. Danny Woodhead and Ryan Matthews have been a pretty good 1-2 punch for them. And, when you got an elite quarterback like him and you – he can keep the ball. I mean, the down in his favor. He's not got to. He doesn't have to sit back down there, and look to his second and third routes. He can get the ball out of his hands quickly and let his athletes do the things that they do. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see his sack numbers are, a lot lower than what they were years ago. And that's even with an O line that's had. I think Coach Coughlin said 16 different O line combinations this year. So that speaks to how well he's playing as a quarterback.
A lot is always expected from this defensive line, and this defense in particular. And a lot of people may not know that you lead the D lineman in tackles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the game last week was huge. What's been your mindset, being a little older than you were, having a lot of success in your career, your personal career, still being productive at this time of year?
Well, I mean,
he's only 30.
I know, right?
Only, yeah, I know.
But that's honestly, I'm very blessed in coming in when it was a time when Michael Strahan was here, and seeing him later on in his career, how he devoted to the weight room and how he devoted to eating the right things and making sure that it was no decline. He wanted to, be at the top of his game when he left the game. And I think he instilled that in me. Obviously, in OC, guys that was around at that time. So, now that I'm the elder statesman, I guess, that's exactly what I think about, in off-season training or during the week when your body feels like crap. You still got to get in that cold tub, that hot tub, go do extra running, go do some light lifting or whatever it may be to make sure that you're on top of your game, because everybody looks at you. Everybody is looking at me to say, we need a play from Justin. We need this from Justin. And I want to be able to go out there and give it to him.
Speaking of giving, you established the tuck rush for literacy.
Yes, sir.
And at the Garden State Plaza in New Jersey on December the 17th, you've got your toy and book drive.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about that and why you decided to throw your weight and create this foundation.
Well, we created Tuck's Rush for Literacy almost 7 years ago. Read, Understand, Succeed, and Hope is the acronym of Rush. And we do a lot of things, but it's the Christmas season this year again. I think this is our 7th year with the toy drive that benefits area Boys and Girls Club units. And, get the opportunity to bring out Terrell Thomas and Justin Pugh to come out and help, raise the awareness for literacy and also, you can get signed autographs from us for a new toy, unwrapped toy, or book. And all these books and all these toys are going to, you know, kids that, you know, might not have had books or might not have, you know, the ability to have Christmas gifts. It's going to put a lot of smiles on kids' faces. And, you know, December 17th, I hope people come out and support it because obviously it's going to a great cause.
And it's at the Garden State Plaza in New Jersey. It begins at 6 p.m., runs from 6 to 8. Justin, good luck with the event, and obviously good luck on Sunday against the Chargers.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate
thanks.
It.
The NFC Defensive Player of the Week, Justin Tuck, joining us here on the program. When we come back, the Blitz with Anita Marks as we continue with Giants 1st and 10 here on MSG. Welcome back to Giants 1st and 10 here on MSG. Giants and Chargers on Sunday. Still to come on the program, Hall of Famer Dan Fouts will join us. Plus, in our online segment, we'll talk with Tom Rock of Newsday and Art Stapleton of The Record. And we're going to bring you our keys to the game. But time to put item number 6 on the board. We call this the Blitz. Here's Anita Marks to take us through the Blitz. Anita?
All right, gentlemen, let's do this. The 2004 NFL Draft, really known best for its quarterbacks of recent history. Let's go through them. Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, Big Ben, Ben Roethlisberger, and Matt Schaub. Also, as we know, known for the trade, which sent Eli, of course, here to New York with the Giants and Phillip Rivers to the Chargers. Here's your question. Would Eli have any Super Bowl titles in San Diego and vice versa? Would Phillip Rivers win any Super Bowl titles here in New York City? A minute on the board. Discuss.
Well, in the words of the Tootsie Pop Owl, the world will never know.
Nice.
Really? And how many licks?
I don't know, but they've both taken their share of hits.
You have an opinion on this?
You know, it's not just about Eli or Phillip Rivers. It's about defense. It's about the overall team. And I think Eli has had a pretty good defense, you know, on those Super Bowl runs with Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck, and so forth. Quarterback can't do it all by himself, so I have to throw in.
But you know, Bob, from 06 to 09, San Diego was pretty competitive.
They were. They had opportunities. To quote your former general manager, George Young, I don't deal in hypotheticals. But anyway, this is hypothetical. I think that Phillip Rivers, if he was with the Giants, would have won a Super Bowl. I don't know about Eli in San Diego, and I think the reason is because Phillip Rivers would have had the same head coach for 10 years. He would have had the same general managers that draft good players, and he would have had an organization that was solid and not disruptive, and they would have kept their quality players, unlike San Diego that drafted good players, and they let them all go. And they changed their head coach after they went 14-2. So he would have won a Super Bowl with the Giants.
You were buzzed. We let you go a little bit over. All right, here we go.
Fine. Treat me that way.
The New York Giants, as we know, they're going to board their flight on Saturday to head out to the left coast. Here's your question. West Coast teams traveling east and vice versa, East Coast teams traveling west, which is more difficult? A minute back on the clock and discuss.
Well, I think the debate is mindset versus body clock. And a lot of teams will put their, whether they're going east or west, will put their teams on the clock that they're going to visit more so than trying to stay at home. But I think traveling back east is a lot more difficult.
Well, I think in terms of body clock, it really doesn't matter a whole lot. I think it's the onus is on the teams coming from the West Coast to the East Coast that may have the problem. But also keep in mind, this time of the year, it's also about the weather. And if you're dealing with the temperatures of the Northeast and you have a team from Southern California coming to this area, they have to adjust to that temperature change.
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier to go from East to West because you can get on West Coast time easier. Just by when you go to bed when you first get out there. And the record shows that teams coming from west to east have been bad. But the caveat to that, in my opinion, guys, when the Raiders and Niners were really good, they came east and they beat a lot of people.
Traveled well.
If you have a good team and you travel, you'll win.
Here you go. Here's your last one. And this, we are excluding last year's rookie quarterback class. Is Phillip Rivers the best quarterback currently in the NFL without a Super Bowl ring? I'm going to throw some other names in the pot. Matty Ice, Jay Cutler, Cam Newton, Tony Romo, Matthew Stafford. A minute on the clock. Discuss.
I think it's all subjective. I mean, he's got talent. He's got championship talent within his body. But it's the body of work and the bodies that are around him that really makes a difference. So I'd say no. He's not.
I think that he is Philip Rivers, Matty Ice, but also Tony Romo. And I hope that he doesn't get his Super Bowl ring this year. But I think those are, and also Jay Cutler. I think those are four quarterbacks who are pretty good and should get a Super Bowl ring.
But is Philip Rivers the best? I'm putting you on the hot seat here, Harry.
I'm not going to go so far as to say he's the best.
Okay.
Probably was, but his clock is ticking.
Why should I even start? I'm going to get buzzed.
Just give me a name.
Come on.
Give me a name.
Now, I think Romo is probably the best of all those guys that hasn't won a Super Bowl yet.
You got Romo in. You got it.
Where's the commissioner? Get me to the commissioner of this whole deal, man. This is a setup. That's our blitz. All right, listen, folks. We used to have a Hall of Famer, Dan Fouts. He never won a Super Bowl ring, but he had some great teams with the San Diego Chargers. We're going to talk with the Hall of Famer, Dan Fouts, getting you set for the Giants and the San Diego Chargers as we continue with Giants First and 10 right here on MSG. Buzz me! Welcome back to Giants First and 10 here on MSG as we get you set for the top 10 things you need to know about the Giants and San Diego Chargers on Sunday. Time for item number 7 as we put it up on the board and welcome in our next guest. This man was drafted by the San Diego Chargers in 1973 in the third round out of Oregon. He played 15 years for the Chargers, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1993 after 6 Pro Bowls and 2 first-team All-Pros. We welcome in former Chargers quarterback, CBS broadcaster, Dan Fouts. Dan, Bob Papa, Carl Banks, Harry Carson, Roman Oben, thanks for a couple minutes. How are you?
Real good. Good to be with all you guys.
Well, Dan, the San Diego Chargers, the New York Giants, two teams at 5-7 with two quarterbacks that are forever linked with the trade in 2004. Kind of a disappointing year for both teams. I know that San Diego had some expectation levels coming in with Mike McCoy as their new head coach, but the one thing that's been pretty neat is to see Philip Rivers thrive in this new system.
Yeah, he's done a great job, and McCoy and Ken Wisenhunt, their offensive coordinator, really designed an offense that would take advantage of his skills as far as getting the ball out of his hand quickly and not taking a beating. The thing about Philip, he's a tough guy. He's got a real quick delivery. He's extremely accurate. It's just been a strange year for San Diego. They've had so many games where they could have won and should have won, but they let him get away. And I don't know if that's with the new coaching staff or just what the problem has been, but they're a handful each week, at least offensively. Now, defense, they do have some problems.
Dan, now, staying on that offensive note, you defined an era of vertical passing probably at its highest level. Are you seeing a lot of the traits that Eric Coryell had in your offense available today, apparent in today's game?
There's no question that his influence on the game is so great that you see 4 and 5 wide receivers now, and nobody saw that really before Coryell came along. And the other thing about it is the use of the tight ends. I mean, we had, the great Kellen Winslow, and every team now, it seems like they've got that athletic, tall receiver at tight end that can play outside or play at the H-back position, move him around. So there's a lot of things that Coryell started that he contributed to the NFL back then that are still being used today.
Dan, I might be repeating myself. Bob has already asked this question, but is there a true disappointment within the fan base of what has transpired so far with this team? You obviously jettison your coach from last year. You get a new coach this year, and the team is still 5-7. Were the expectations much greater than where we are right now?
Yeah, I think there's, everybody to go to the Super Bowl and win it. You've got to give a new coaching staff some time and a little leeway. But the problem with San Diego is you can go right to about 3 or 4 games and say, man, they had that game, and they let it get away. And I think that's what has turned off some of the fans, that they had a blackout last week. And I know they're having trouble selling out for the Giants game this weekend, which is really embarrassing, I think, for any pro franchise. But it's an old stadium, and the fans don't want to pay that price. And you really can't blame them. They've been frustrated over the last couple of years and not making it to the playoffs and seeing games this year that they should have won get away.
Dan, it's great having you on the show. And Roman, of course, played offensive line with the Chargers and with the Giants and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I got Banks and Carson to each side of me. You're probably happy right now you're on the phone and not in the studio, because if I say that to you, it's got to bring back some bad memories.
Yeah, but, you know, if they hit me now, it's assault and battery, and they go to jail.
You know, the last time we played against San Diego and Dan, they were coming off of a 55-10 win in Miami. That was 1986.
Yeah.
And nobody thought that we could beat the mighty San Diego Chargers at that time, but we did beat them here in the Meadowlands, and that really was the beginning of our Super Bowl run in 1986.
Well, I'm glad I could oblige, but I got to tell you, it wasn't me. Some guy stole my uniform that day. That's why he got those 5 interceptions. I swear to God, it wasn't me.
Hey, Dan, we appreciate the time today talking about the Giants and Chargers, and I know that you do great work every week on CBS as part of their network coverage and also doing the games on radio on Westwood One. But thank you so much for your time. Have a great Christmas season, and we'll see you down the road.
Hey, listen, I appreciate you guys having me on, and good luck to you all.
Thanks.
That's Hall of Famer Dan Fouts joining us here on Giants First and 10. Time to put item number 8 up on the board. Carl Banks goes to the coach's tape with strategy.
All right, let's take a look at the San Diego Chargers 34 defense. They've got 3 down linemen, 2 linebackers. So the 2 areas that are most vulnerable against a 34 defense is you run at an area that they call the bubble. This is the bubble, and there's the bubble. You call it a bubble because the guards are uncovered, and then you've got the edge. You always want to threaten the edge or the bubble when running. The challenge for an offense is making sure you do not allow the defensive ends to push you back into the backfield. Here's an outside run. Let's take a look at the defensive end. He is the guy who destroys the play. They want to get a designed outside run to attack this outside linebacker, but it's not possible. Take a look at what he does. He pushes the offensive tackle back into the backfield, which there's nothing, no room there to go. No cutback lane, and the play is minimal. Now, let's take a look at the Chargers offense. They're right on that fringe area, not quite red zone. The guy that you've got to be aware of, tight end Antonio Gates. Now, he's a threat when you get in this close, and the guys who are going to be responsible for him are going to be your linebackers and then your safety. But primarily, it's going to come down to this guy making sure he makes contact. His number one read, once he knows the number two receiver is the tight end, will be here. Now, his responsibility is to reroute an outside release to a safety waiting on it so that there's not a lot of stress on the safety who has to read both linebacker and wide receiver. Now, let's run it. I'll slow it down. Now, the linebacker has to now reroute the tight end, but he doesn't, and the tight end splits the two safeties. There's a safety, there's a safety. Without linebacker help, the tight end walks into the end zone. Thanks. Back to you, Bob.
And strategy with Carl Banks, brought to you by PSE&G. We make things work for you. Don't forget, make sure you check out all the Giants programming throughout the course of the week right here on MSG. Every Friday night, it's the debut of Giants First and 10. On Saturday night, you go over to My9 for Giants Access Blue. You stay on My9 on Sundays right after the game for the Giants postgame show. But on Sunday mornings, we give you a little history with Giants Chronicles over on MSG. And then Tuesdays, it's Giants Rewind. Wednesdays, it's the coach's press conference, all on MSG, your home for Big Blue football. When we come back, our online segment, as we continue with Giants First and 10 on MSG after this.
They're going to go
go for it here on fourth down.
RG3 is going to keep it. He runs right and he gets plastered by John Beeson.
Oh boy, did he take a shot.
And we welcome you back to first and 10 here on MSG. Getting you set for the Giants and the Chargers. Yeah, what a play by John Beeson against RG3, and the Giants win on Sunday Night Football. And 17 tackles for John Beeson. It is time for our online segment. Joining me, as always, the Senior VP of Communications, Pat Hanlon. We got Tom Rock of Newsday and Art Stapleton of The Record. So, guys, we put item number 9 up on the board, and let's talk about John Beeson. 17 tackles, and he didn't win NFC Defensive Player of the Week.
He had 18 tackles after the coaches reviewed the film. He had 13 solos and 5 assists.
Coaches gave him an extra one. Maybe he gets that little extra credit, too, because of what he's done for this team. Because ever since he showed up, this defense has been playing lights out for most of the time. And it's a lot of it is because of him. And you have a lot of guys who are proud defensive players who have won Super Bowls here. And they're saying, my goodness, this John Beeson has saved us.
The godsend.
Justin Tuck, godsend.
Well, he's the voice and the identity that the defense needed to pull it all together. And you just mentioned Tuck's name. He's the guy that was the NFC Defensive Player of the Week.
You know, with Beeson, you know, I had several people tell me that, you know, when it comes to being a leader, you know, you could talk about being a leader in a locker room and earning your stripes. But if you are a true leader and you get dropped into a room, people recognize leadership and they follow you. And I think from the moment John Beeson stepped in this locker room, when he spoke up, the game that he was active, his first game, 48 hours after being acquired from Carolina, the Eagles game here, and he spoke up in the locker room to talk to the team. Some of the guys said, you know, they looked over and were like, who's this guy? He's barely been here. And he spoke up about not giving up and what it meant for this team to show resiliency. I think from that moment on, they knew that they had a leader and a player on their hands.
He delivers hits on players. Justin Tuck had 4 sacks last week. Let's talk about hits going the other way, though. Eli Manning sacked for a career-high 31 times this year. We're not even through the entire season yet. 2009 was the career-high 30. How do they get this thing under control?
Yeah, this number 31 has really snuck up on a lot of people. We saw 31 turnovers, too.
There's one guy that 31 didn't sneak
up
on.
Yeah, I know.
Number 10.
Number 10.
He's felled all 31 of them.
And then some.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting because you talk about this offense, and we've talked about them adapting to their struggles up front in terms of what they're able to do and how they're able to protect. You know, 6 different configurations of this offensive line, and continuity is hurt. But Will Beatty is being paid like a superstar, and he even talked this week about how he's struggling to live up to those expectations. You cannot pay that kind of money and make that kind of commitment to a left tackle when you have a rookie on the right side, and he's the most consistent guy you have on the line. Beatty's struggles this year have really contributed to that on this line for 31 sacks.
I saw a stat that he's given up 10 of them this year. That's more than he gave up in his first 4 years. That's a third of the 31 that have been allowed by the Giants this year. So that's definitely something that has to change. And he talked about almost like a golfer where he changes his swing in the offseason. He changed his technique a little bit. Now he's trying to go back to what was working for him last year, but it's hard during the season to make that adjustment. He's trying to. It's obviously not working now. He gets another shot at the Redskins in a couple of weeks.
You know, and it was really apparent in the game against Washington in the fact that they were running the ball pretty effectively, and yet Eli, there were certain plays, especially based on the position of where we were all sitting for that game, watching the action.
You mean in the far corner?
Watching the action come at us, and you could see Eli's dropping back to pass. There was no time to get the ball downfield. Everyone says, well, what about Nix and Cruz? There's no time to really do it.
Yeah, it's taken away a big part of their offensive game plan. Their philosophy has been shut off because they can't take the 7-step drops and wait for the plays to develop.
I mean, if you think about the back-to-back games early in the year, the Carolina and Kansas City, the big part of this offensive philosophy was we're going to take shots down the field. We are going to beat these teams down the field. Obviously, Carolina, I mean, I think it was like 4 sacks and 5 plays at one point. And in the Kansas City game, they actually did beat the Chiefs downfield with Victor Cruz's long touchdown. I mean, I think that was the last long play that this offense has had. That's week 4. It's a long time, and a lot of it goes up to the inconsistency up front.
Yeah, I mean, the two long pass plays. Cruz had a 70-yarder against the Cowboys in the opener, and then the 69-yarder against Kansas City. They've been few and far between. But, Pat, Tom Coughlin's found a way to kind of work around that a little bit.
Well, the way you work around it is your running game becomes more effective, and the shots that you end up taking are the play-action plays like the Brandon Myers touchdown last week.
All right, we're just about out of time. Prediction for this week is the Giants go west.
Two pretty evenly matched teams. I'm going to say it's going to be a close game. I think the Giants will pull it out on field goal 24-21.
You know, I think the trip this week coming off of the bounce back against the Redskins, I think San Diego wins this one 28-24 is what I'm going with. Would not surprise me to see the Giants defense play extremely well. And if they can force some turnovers on Phillip Rivers, I think they can win the game. But I'm going to go to the Chargers with the win.
All right, we're out of time. Good stuff.
That's called a split prediction.
That is a split prediction. So what are the keys to the game? We're going to tell you about that as we return to Giants first and 10 right here on MSG. Justin Tuck joins us right now in studio.
Obviously, underdressed.
In the words of the Tootsie Pop Owl, the world will never know.
This is a setup.
But you know, if they hit me now, it's assault and battery and they go to jail.
All right, that's the Geico recap. You could save 15% or more on car insurance by simply going to Geico.com. All right, it's time to put item number 10 on the board. It's the Giants and Chargers. Item number 10 is our keys to the game. So once again, we turn it over to Harry Carson. Your keys for the Giants.
Well, quite frankly, I think they have to start fast, and especially the defensive line. They have to get off the ball. They have to rattle Rivers and, you know, shut down the running game. But, you know, I talk about it week in and week out. The defensive line really is the key to the defense. If they can't stop anybody, it's going to be a long day.
All right, Carl Banks, your keys for the Giants.
Well, I think it comes down to defensive backs because you've got to contain Antonio Gates and you've got to create some second and third and long situations.
A guy like Will Hill, who the Giants haven't had that kind of guy. He's the guy they're going to need in this game, aren't they?
Oh, they will. They'll need him a lot.
Okay. Roman, your keys.
Well, we're staying on defense, guys, and my history with that organization. And, you know, Phil Rivers, if you force him out of his timing and his rhythm, he's going to make some bad decisions. He's not very mobile, so you've got to do something to disrupt that timing. You know, tip the ball, jump up in the air, find a way to get to him because that ball will come out quick. So you have to force Phil Rivers to make poor decisions.
All right. We got the top 10 things. We feel like we're all educated.
100%.
So.
How about our audience? They got it?
I think they got it.
All right. We'll put this bad boy to bed then.
Yeah.
For Harry, Carl, Roman, and our entire crew, I'm Bob Papa. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Giants First and 10 right here on MSG. We'll see you next week, everybody.